Well, hello and welcome to everybody to Aparo's The Aparo Effect podcast. We are so happy to be here with you and glad that you tuned in. And my name is Kim Lanfear. I am Aparo's Chief Executive Officer, and I'm really excited to be here today meeting with an old friend, not that old. We're very young. We can't be old friends, but we are. Patton McDowell, who is a prominent fundraiser and leadership consultants here in this region as well as around the country. And so we are very pleased to have him here with us. Patton, I'm going to let you introduce yourself, and then we're going to come back and talk about what we're talking about today, which is leadership and nonprofit excellence.
Kim, delighted to join you. And thank you again for being a guest on our podcast. And the podcast is among three things I focus. I've been in the nonprofit sector for three decades, and focus in particular, as you noted, on leadership in our sector. So I do coaching and consulting. It often involves personal and organizational strategic planning, leadership development for staff and board members. And then, of course, fundraising is always part of just about any conversation you have in this sector. But I've had my consulting practice for almost 15 years after working both for the Special Olympics organization, as well as leading fundraising for two universities here in North Carolina, UNC Wilmington and Queens University right here in Charlotte.
That's fantastic. And the name of your consulting firm is PMA Nonprofit Leadership.
That is correct.
I want to make sure I put that out there too, so people know how to find you.
Thank you.
And Patton really has been an anchor in this community and sharing that out beyond this community for ever since I've been here. So, and I've been here 23 years. So you're a star for us and for the community and for the leaders in the nonprofit sector. You know, we've always known when you're in a meeting in the nonprofit sector around leadership and support and strategic guidance, Patton's name always comes up.
You're too kind, Kim. Thank you.
I don't lie. So it's true. And I understand that we also have had a recent year-long anniversary of your book, Your Path to Nonprofit Leadership, has been out for a year now. Tell us a little bit about that journey, Patton.
Thank you.
That book.
Yeah, well, and you're right. It's kind of one of those things. I think many of us, you have things that are bouncing around in your head and you think about putting them on paper, and that's finally what I did. The pandemic, quite honestly, helped. It gave us all some quiet time to reflect, and we couldn't go anywhere. And so it, in my case, helped accelerate this concept of your path to nonprofit leadership, which is also the title of our podcast. So that theme is a consistent brand for us, because that's what I am really passionate about. And the book has three audiences in mind. And again, that's something we can talk about, Kim, because I think there are three distinct, areas of leadership. Number one is that emerging leader. And I'm excited that now over 300 university programs across the United States have undergraduate and graduate programs in nonprofit management, nonprofit leadership, philanthropic studies. So this emerging leader sector is one that we all need to pay attention to. And so again, part of the emphasis of the book was to help someone like that. I've graduated. I want to get into the space. Help me navigate the path. The second group, Kim, is the one that I guess I would call the mid-career plateau. And you and I've had lots of conversation with folks that are in the sector, generally like the sector, but maybe they're stuck.
Right.
You know, you've been doing it for 10 years and like, I think I want to be an executive director someday, or I'm not sure. And so what is a path forward for someone like that? And then the third audience is the senior executive, you know, like yourself, who are still, and again, that's why I like talking to you, because I think you appreciate, you know, there's a lifelong learning to the work we do. We're never done. We never arrive. And you indeed have goals and aspirations. And I've talked to a lot of senior executives who I feel like, and you can better respond to this, it's a lonely world sometimes to be an executive director. And so you don't have necessarily the immediate conversations available to you. So again, I hope the book can also be a resource for someone like that.
Yeah, I'll lean into that for sure. You know, for people who are thinking about the career and where they are in their career or thinking about a career, you know, the executive director is a lonely spot. You have a board above you who manages you, but they are managing you 2 hours a month.
Right.
You know, on a volunteer basis. So they know your business, but they don't really know your business. They want to support you. And then you have a team that you really have to lean into and build. And I found that executive director role is about the team more than I really expected, more than I expected. When I read your book and I looked at the 7 keys to advancing your career in philanthropic sector, I was really struck by some of those, and we'll come back to that because I want to hit on something first that you said. But there's a journey. There's a journey in all of it, and you learn.
Indeed.
For sure.
Indeed.
I really want to go. I want to talk about the emerging, and I want to talk about all three, but I want to talk about that second sector first. Person who's in the nonprofit space and is like, I think I like this, and where do I want to go next? Because one of the things that hit me when you said, you know, when you're that person, you're in the middle and you're like, do I go laterally? Do I go up? And I have always referred to my career as a jungle gym versus a ladder.
Right.
Because I've found that if you're focused
around.
On what?
So you're jumping around sometimes, aren't you? Not necessarily straight up one ladder.
Exactly. I've always found that I'm looking for that interesting thing, an opportunity to grow. And it might be sideways. It might be down a little bit. It might be up. It might be around. But it's not going this singular view up, 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 up.
Right.
And I kind of want to explore that with you, that thought about, because when I think about somebody who's in a mid-career, you know, are you thinking the only spot you can go to is ED? And that may not be the right fit for you. Going back again to what we said, it's lonely. You got to understand how to manage the business.
Yes.
Of the mission. And that involves some things that maybe, I mean, when I took this role, I came from programs. And it took me a while. I missed programs. Man, I love doing the work, you know, helping nonprofits. I loved helping them. And so talk a little bit about that. What you think about that journey in the middle. How do people decide?
You captured it beautifully. And like you, I came through the Special Olympics organization as a programs person. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And admittedly thought that was the only ladder really available to me. But like you, learned that if I wanted to and aspired to greater leadership opportunities, I was going to have to broaden my skill set. And so one of the things that the book talks about is looking at that full range of skills and experiences you will need if you want to advance in whatever sector in the nonprofit space, because you can be and you should leverage your skills as a program person like you have, Kim, but you've also expanded your skills and experiences to include some of these other things. And mm-hmm. I've got a worksheet literally in the book that I refer to about, you know, you're going to have to understand the finances and budget, like you said. You're going to have to understand implications of DEI and board governance and all these elements that maybe aren't part of your current job description. So for those folks that feel stuck in the middle, one, I think embracing some sort of reflection and self-assessment, not really in a punitive sense, like what am I weak at? But no, let's look at, you've got skills, how do you leverage them? And you need to be kind of eyes wide open as to areas you can improve. And the good thing is there are support structures in place. I just hate it when I meet someone for coffee and they just feel like they're just absolutely stuck and nowhere to go. And I'm like, no, let's do something about this. And among those things, and I think, Kim, you would agree as such a community collaborator that you are, that there are folks that are out there that you can strategically network with who can help you. So, for example, I suggest that everyone that I'm working with, I'm like, let's identify a couple of peers that are in a comparable position to you that maybe could be someone that you can bounce ideas off of. You know, they're on a similar journey to you. But equally important is the aspirational peer. In other words, someone in your sector or even outside your sector that's 5-10 years ahead of you on the path. And generally, I find folks like that are happy to share. And as you said, Kim, maybe they can identify a ring in the jungle gym that you can jump to, you know. And for me, I finally realized, well, I love Special Olympics, but I need to get more fundraising experience. So I jumped over to the higher education space, and things like that, I think, can allow you to maybe see more broadly as you, I think, learned yourself.
Absolutely. I love the aspirational peer. I love that concept. You know, lots of conversations are had about mentors versus sponsors. I have personally never been terribly successful or had much involvement in mentors and sponsors. It just hasn't been in my wheelhouse, and I always feel I've missed that. But that aspirational peer, talk a little bit about that. How does one identify an aspirational peer? What would you do when you were making, you know, your leap sideways on the Jungle Gym?
Yeah, no, I love that topic. And again, I was fortunate to have folks involved. But here's what I did. You know, within whatever organization I am, and all of our organizations are generally part of larger, organizational communities. So at Special Olympics, for example, the first time I went to a conference, I simply started posing the question, hey, I'm the new guy. I'm in the program side. Who do you think are some of the most senior and impressive program directors across the country? And sure enough, you know, one, two, three names continue to come up. And so I was like, all right, I need to talk to Mark in New Jersey, and I need to talk to Beth in Colorado, that they are generally regarded as the, you know, the senior folks and experts in this field. And then what I would do is look to arrange what I'm called just a strategic interview. I think you have to be, you know, responsive. I mean, respectful of someone's time, and you know, you can't go too fast and go too hard. I mean, I would just say, hey, love what you're doing in Colorado, Beth. Would you be open to a 30-minute phone call, maybe 45 minutes? I'd love to ask you some questions about your career journey. And I find, Kim, people almost always are willing, especially if you frame it in a way that I'm not asking you for 3 hours. You know, I'm going to be reasonable. I'm going to do my homework and understand a little bit about what you do. But people responded. And I became friends with Beth and Mark, who took me under their wing and helped me as you know, again, veterans of the field. And I'd ask like three simple questions in these interviews. So like, tell me why you got into the field. You know, people love to tell their origin stories.
Right.
Right. I think people love that.
Yeah.
Right.
Ask me now, I'll go, and that'll be the podcast. Okay.
you warm them up with that.
Origin
and stories. And then I say, second question, what are you most proud of? Tell me what you're most proud of in your professional career, you know, something you have accomplished. And again, people love to tell that story, but it reveals things, and then it allows for follow-up questions like, all right, well, what about the biggest challenge you faced? How'd you get through it? When you hit the mid-career kind of slump, what'd you do? Or
great questions.
You know, what resources, Kim, helped you when you hit that kind of bump in the road? And every time I'm taking notes, because they're giving me, all right, well, here's a book I read, here's a mentor I had, here's advice I received, here's the conference I went to. And so, again, the aspirational peer concept, starting just with 30 or 45 minutes of conversation, can lead to so much. And then what I would do is I have ever since tried to have two or three conversations like that every month. Every month. Now, not all of them maybe are quote aspirational, but you and I both have, you know, friends and colleagues that we kind of lose touch with. And I'm like, all right, who do I need to circle back to? But these kind of conversations can really be valuable. And that's where, at least for me, aspirational interviews like that led to networking opportunities and frankly helped me break through for, you know, a new opportunity on my career ladder.
That's great. That's great. You know, one of the things you mentioned in your book is the worksheet that you have. And I happen to have that. I'll make the paper noise so that people can hear that I actually
they know you're actually working.
And it is really great. And it really goes through, you know, how to advance your career and how to think about, assess yourself and come up with those next steps. I really liked that. And it talks about these 10 skills for being in leadership. And for me, strategic planning and what was the other one that was so high up? Speaking.
Indeed. You know,
those were
communication
ones that
skills,
came naturally to me, right? So looking through this assessment and picking the things that, okay, I'm good there, but where do I need to lean into? And, you know, for me, you know, your listening and your conversation, your active listening, note-taking, not interrupting, that was really key guidance that getting where I've gotten, I had to learn that.
Right.
That was definitely something. If you're a leader and you're wanting to take charge, you sometimes forget to listen.
Indeed.
And you're not a leader if you're not listening. You're just
well
not.
Put. That's why I kind of emphasize that, because I think you're right. Naturally, people think communication is, well, my ability to do public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that's important. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to be behind the podium for your gala or whatever event it is, but you're also going to have to be moderating a staff meeting, and you're going to have to listen in that one-on-one tough conversation with one of your team members and be working that community social where you need to listen and have good active listening skills. So I'm glad you lifted up, Kim, that there's more depth, I guess, to communication than just your speaking ability. That's certainly part of it, but not the only thing.
And I actually think the speaking is less important. I think you can be a very effective leader of a nonprofit and be a, I don't want to label it on a mediocre or something, but less than star spangled banners, you know, speaker. You can still have the passion and the content. But I think your point is really well made, Patton, that it's that listening. And that's a skill that is not straightforward. It's easy to say, just listen more. And you think, okay, I'll be quiet and I'll listen. But that it's more than that.
Well, and you can appreciate this, Kim, because I'm also allude to some of the written communication skills as a leader,
mm-hmm.
because you have to do everything from the handwritten thank you note to your biggest donor, to the executive memo that your board wants in advance of the meeting, to that kind of aspirational letter to a donor group. it needs to come from your hand. And so there's other communication skills. And of course, that's the intent of that worksheet, is not to obsess over things that maybe were weaker, but also leverage the strengths. You know, you bring public speaking skills, Kim, to the table. All right, let's make sure we're getting you in the right place to, you know, exemplify that.
Right.
And what I usually say is, of the 10 skills and experiences, most of us are going to be good in a third of them, competent in a third, and then need to work on a third.
I think that's well said. When I look at this, strategic planning strong, writing strong, but, you know, maybe the learning plan, the short and long range plan.
Right.
You know, that's something that I've learned. Excuse me for a tickle in my throat there. On the higher end of the leadership journey is that, and this, a wise person, one of my board chairs told me this, you don't have to have the plan, but you have to be able to bring the right people in the room to create the plan.
Yeah. Interesting point.
So the CEO isn't always the one who has all of the vision in their head. All of that weighs on them. They have a team of leaders, hopefully, that they've lifted up and trained and listened to and engaged with, and they can help create that vision. Because I got stuck at one point where I couldn't see it. And I remember my board chair saying, you don't have to see it.
Don't pressure yourself.
You've got the people around you.
Yeah, right.
You know? Pause and let them help you see it. Help them let you get to that next level. And that was freeing and really took the whole organization to a whole nother level.
Excellent point. And you're right. We're not alone as leaders, are we? You know, it is an element of surrounding ourselves with talent that supplements, you know, the skills that we bring to the table.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, I don't want to let us leave today without going to the other areas that you're talking about. First, the emerging leader. You know, one of the things that Aparo does is leaned into emerging nonprofits.
Nice.
But those are leaders who are already in a leadership spot, not necessarily the emerging leader who maybe has just put their toe in into a junior position, or maybe is thinking about that junior position. And we in the field of nonprofit work and service in the community. And I do hate the word nonprofit, by the way.
You and I talked about that.
Yeah,
you're not really the only like one I've talked term. About that. Right.
Yep. Yep.
It's a tax
small
status.
Business, mission-driven.
Right. Right.
Mission-driven organization. Let's call it that.
Better.
So, you know, talk a little bit about what you see or have seen or have led in that area that did you highlight in this book?
Yeah, well, the first thing I want to say to nonprofit leaders listening right now is, do you have an internship program? There are incredibly talented. I've been fortunate at our firm to have interns from UNC Charlotte, from NC State, and in conversation with Cornell University right now. They are talented undergraduate and graduate students who frankly need experience. And the fact is, they can enhance the work you're doing. Now, again, I don't mean for you to bring them in and just have them work the copy machine, but they're smart. And so, again, as I hear nonprofit leaders struggling with turnover, particularly in junior level positions, I'm like, all right, but what are you doing to cultivate this next generation of emerging leaders because they want experience, and it's a win-win opportunity. Now, I admit it requires some management, you know, of having more people. But it's something, again, that this emerging generation is there. They want time, they want hours, and they're willing to dive in. And so, again, what I'm looking is at both ends of this equation. Are organizations preparing themselves to incorporate this emerging leader generation? And how do we help, again, with a similar subset of that worksheet that you were looking at, Kim, helping that young professional sharpen their skills and build experiences so they can help you if and when they join Aparo, you know, either as a full-time employee down the road?
That is so smart. We've done a couple of internship situations. And, you know, if you do it from altruism, which is, you know, a part of it, you know, you want to lift up a young person and give them an opportunity. That's all well and good. But I agree with you. You know, the management part of it is important because you've got to have a plan. You got to have a plan for these people to come in and use their skills. Otherwise, they don't get that much out of it and you don't. And you can get a lot out of interns. Yeah, I think that's absolutely an excellent point, Matt Patton.
But I'm glad you said it. You got to be thoughtful. You need to create a job description. Mm-hmm. You know, they were going to want to work. But generally, every nonprofit has content creation. That's almost always a possibility, you know, adding to your website, to your blog, to your newsletter. So a lot of these talented young folks can do research and writing to lead
data analytics.
And there you go.
You know, how many of us don't have that on the team, but man, we have a lot of data. We'd love somebody to play with it. Well, you know,
my intern, Zach, he's a spreadsheet wizard.
Yeah.
And yours truly is not. So I got to give a shout out to Zach Perry because he came in and he's helped with the analytics that you just described in a wonderful way.
And they're so important. And we find, you know, we're a tech company, right? So we,
right.
and we still could broaden our expand our analytic perspective. I think we all could. It's an expensive area and it's something that's important. So last but not least, let's talk about the leader who is already in that seat and what you see out there in our nonprofit community as things that those of us in this seat aren't thinking about. Maximizing.
We started, Kim, the result of this book, frankly, when to create dialogue, we started a mastermind program where we've been bringing, and you and I may have talked about, but we're bringing groups of 7 or 8 nonprofit leaders from across the country to have dialogue. And many of them are in that senior position. One of the key topics that you've already addressed is kind of the lonely world that sometimes exists. So if nothing else, we're creating dialogue in a safe space that I think many nonprofit leaders sadly are struggling with. And the mental health issues that affect every sector, but certainly ours, and you know, is one part. But the other topic that comes up, and I'm encouraging, is I want, Kim, your voice to get beyond just your organization and your subsector, but to the larger nonprofit community. So a lot of times we talk about, and that's what I'm encouraging, how do we make sure your voice is out there? And you're really good at this, you know, whether it's on the social media posts or the communication tools that you use at Aparo. But I find a lot of very talented senior leaders have had to understandably keep their head down, get the job done. I'm like, yeah, but we need your gifts beyond just your organization. So we use that as an exercise. Where is your voice going to be heard? How do we get your voice out there? And so that's one way we've done it. And also it's where do you want to help move the needle on a state level, regional, or even national level? And so in other words, sometimes you might be like, I love my job, Patton. You know, this is not a career advancement discussion. I'm like, all right, well, how do we help you do your job even better and create even greater impact? And again, like you're doing and expanding Aparo's reach, that's often, I think, where senior leaders like you, and I'm guessing, I don't mean to speak for you, but you always want to be moving forward, right?
Right.
Even if you've arrived at the senior spot on the org chart. And so I'm like, all right, are you on the national kind of board of your association, or are there opportunities for you to speak before organizations? You want to get more involved in advocacy, you know, at a governmental level? There are ways you can move the needle. And so that's where I think, Kim, there's opportunities taking talented leaders like you and hoping, you know, elevate that even further.
Yeah, I think you speak from great wisdom on this. Oh, no. Are you still there?
Yes, indeed.
My computer just made a little glitch, so I don't know what I did. I hit a button, and I just want to make sure you're still there. Sorry.
All good. Blame has got us.
Sorry, my entire screen went black, and I thought I've just unplugged the computer. That would be a fun way to end the podcast.
Yeah, right. A little sudden, but it still be interesting, right?
I'm not going to touch anything else here until we wrap up. But those are excellent, excellent points. Thinking about, you know, you as a leader, if you love what you're doing, you still can get caught in it. You know, and you do it for 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is, you're still good at it. You're still adding value, but you've got to make sure you think about what's adding value to you too, so you can continue that journey and continue to bring good to your team and good to the community.
Well put.
I love the idea of reaching out to others. One of the things I've found is creating informal groups of leaders. There's some formal groups, and those are good. They certainly have great meaning, but I find the smaller groups that I meet with quarterly over a cup of coffee or a lunch appointment are really helpful. And I find that other CEOs have need of that community. And we express it when we get together over a lunch or a coffee or whatever it is. And it's very apparent that that is broad, widespread. The community of other EDs to have conversation and to build collaboration and to build the ideas to maximize the impact that we're bringing. So
well put. Exactly right.
Well, I think we're coming to the end of our time. Limo gave me a little ping over on the side. So I want to make sure that is there anything else, Patton, that I may have missed in talking about, first of all, the anniversary of your book, and I'm going to say the name of the book, Your Path to Nonprofit Leadership by Dr. Patton McDowell. So look for that book. It's not a big, long book, and it's very powerful, very helpful for lifting up those of us in the journey of nonprofit leadership. So thank you for writing it and for bringing this conversation today. Is there anything you might want to share that I haven't hit upon today?
Grateful for the conversation and bringing this topic to the forefront, because I'm proud of the book and hopeful that it can be helpful to our different kind of levels of nonprofit leaders. But I just am glad to keep this conversation going. The sector needs talented people to consider leadership. And so that's my ultimate goal. That's what drives me.
Because there's his passion.
You're right, exactly. And sadly, there's talented people that, Kim, are leaving our sector.
Yes.
And so perhaps that's the thing that drives both of us, is how do we create an environment that this talent stays with us so that the mission of these organizations like yours can be achieved. And so,
in our company, it's so important to keep an environment where people want to stay and grow.
Yes.
I have such an amazing team of professionals, and I'm sure I'm not the only nonprofit CEO out there who would think their team is amazing, but my team is particularly amazing. And
it's all right. You have a right to be proud. Good for you.
That's right. And, keeping them challenged and happy and safe, those become really important things. They won't be with me forever, but giving them tools to where they'll go onto the next place and help build those same things. I mean, that's all we can hope for in this journey, I think.
Indeed.
And I will tell you, I'm going to use your worksheet with my leadership team. So
I got a new one too. So if I can share, because, please. Again, I've gotten such great feedback. I've been able to speak about the book across the country. So there are actually 12 skills and experiences now. I was at 10. I have been effectively lobbied for two other elements. So I'm happy to share that with you. And of course, then you can react, Kim, and see if you agree with what is now the 12 essential skills and experiences.
I would love that, because the worksheet alone is just something that a manager can use with someone that they're talking to just about growth. And let's talk about this. Let's lean into this one. What do you think? So I'm looking forward to doing that. So yes, please share. And everybody else, go to the website and download and get into.
happy to share.
Patton, so great to talk with you again today. We don't get to speak enough. So we've got to change that a little bit. But I love having you here and hearing your words of wisdom, which lift the whole sector. So thank you for sharing. And thank you also to all of you who have joined us today for the Aparo Effect podcast. We hope you'll tune in again another time for another great conversation, but I don't think we could have a greater one than this one today. So thank you, Patton.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.